Because you know why?
Why?
Because it feels right.
It feels right. Legendary.
All right, Adam, we're here. We're doing it again. I want to say we're the best podcast in the world, but maybe that's a little aggressive. Maybe we're the best pickleball podcast in the world, self-proclaimed.
Let's go with that. Okay. I think that's at this point in the, you know, in the pod, I think we'll just go with that latter comment instead
we'll
of
the first one. Okay. We'll settle for that early. It feels right to be here with you. We got some stuff to cover. We've got a Texas Open recap, PPA. I'm not sure where it was. Was it Oasis again or was it somewhere else?
It was at Oasis.
Okay. We got that. We got a Nationals is coming up. A little preview teaser for that with some interesting matchups. We've got a lot going on in the MLP vibe world. MLP is not going to like that. They're just kind of lumped together now. It's not MLP world anymore. It's MLP vibe world.
Right.
So, some updates there with Mark Cuban. And I'm sure there's going to be many more updates to come. But let's get rolling here, Adam. Actually, how are you doing? Tell me how your life's going right now.
No, I'm doing great. Enjoying this time off, not participating in Nationals. So I'm done for the year pickleball wise, which, you know, is usually when you have those long breaks, it's pretty exciting for a week or two and you start to miss it a little bit, whether that's whatever, commentary or play, mostly play, I would say. But I'm feeling good. I'm just here in the new office of the new house with, you know, 65 of Prof's awards back behind me here. So, I mean, it's my podcast, best pickleball podcast in the world, and I'm in a room full of Prof's awards. You know,
are they golf trophies or are
it's
they
fitting for our relationship? She's got all kinds of stuff, you know, academic All-American, this and that. I'm like a yada yada yada. I'm tired of hearing about it, Prof. Okay, but anyway, so so let's get into it. Let's start off with just
talking about your fresh haircut that looks smoking hot. God, look at you! What a handsome fella,
Robert. I'm not gonna lie, it just felt right because I got in the chair at the barbershop and I didn't even know what I was going to say. She asked me what I wanted and I just said, you know what? Normally I get a two on the sides. Let's just two the whole thing. So here we go.
I love the audible at the line of scrimmage.
Oh yeah, absolutely. So, so let's get, started with, you know, some of the, I don't know what we recorded 3 or 4 days ago. And so there hasn't been a crazy amount of new information on the MLP vibe front, but definitely a few things of note. Cuban rolled up to the Texas Open. Mark Cuban, that is the first announced team owner for Vibe.
Yeah.
And he watched a few matches and, you know, sent out some tweets, kind of doing his thing. You know, he's the shark. So he's throwing some shade to MLP and some of his buddy owners, high-end owners over there.
Yeah.
And, you know, they had some pretty playful, kind of funny back and forth on Twitter. I think Gary V said, challenged him to a singles match of pickleball and this happened and that happened. So I thought that was kind of interesting.
Which was all in, it seemed like it was all in good fun, but at the same time, you got to be a little worried if you're MLP because I talked about this. I don't even know if it was on the podcast, but I talked about this not too long ago. And it's like, it's not going to be like a Tom Dundon versus Steve Kuhn thing. It's going to be, you know, if the celebrity influencer type owners start talking to each other behind the scenes and they're like, well, why are we doing these two different leagues? Why aren't we all just in the same league? Why don't we all just, you know, combine and that kind of thing? And, or not combine in terms of Vibe and MLP, but like, let's just all go to this one side. You know what I mean? I feel like that's the big risk, right? And we've already seen it once with a team last year at MLP, the Discovery Warriors, which, you know, maybe some people forgot that team existed, but that was a Discovery Land company team. And once Tom Dundon bought the PPA, Mike Meldman, who's the owner of Discovery Land, you know, he pulled his investment from MLP and went over to the PPA. So that does happen. And that, you know, I think there's a risk of that for MLP. And I think, you know, I'm sure they're on top of it. I'm sure they're navigating that with their owners, but that's a real concern if I'm in charge of MLP.
No, I didn't even know that. So that's a great statement. Discovery Warriors, I believe it was
Like Zane was on
Tyson,
that team.
Zane, yep. Tyson, Leia, and they did well. They kind of steamrolled the regular season. I think they fell a little short in the, you know, after it got to a certain amount of teams. But in that pool play, they were really, really good. And I didn't even think about them pulling out for this 2022 season. So that is a very interesting fact. And we've talked about it multiple times, Rob. It's all about who you know in life. So a lot of these guys run in the same circles, whether it's business stuff, philanthropy stuff, whatever. So you're exactly right. I think that there is a little risk or a little something behind the scenes going on that we'll just have to see about moving forward.
Yeah, I think it'll be – yeah, because I think Cuban's actual tweet was like to Durant and Gary Vee and whoever else, and it was something along the lines of, you chose the wrong league, it's not too late to come over. While you know,
yeah,
while said in jest, there's actually probably serious conversations going on behind the scenes around that.
Yeah, joking,
it
not
wouldn't
joking.
Surprise me. Yeah, joking, not joking.
For sure. Exactly. So, and I can't remember if we talked about it last time, but it's official that there will be six teams in Vibe. And yep. Also, it is official that the MLP is kind of scrapping the hybrid tournament team aspect. And that's it was initially set up. They were going to have a 3-day regular tournament, and then the fourth day would be the team event. So I believe that they have scrapped that and are going to a full on team event. And I think some of the, some of the owners in the league were, I don't really know, but less than thrilled. A little birdie told me about it being a basically they said, we didn't buy a tour, we bought a team. And so They wanted it to be team focused. And I think that that's completely fine. I get what MLP was trying to do with the tournament and team aspect of it. But I like the team play better. And obviously the owners like that as well. So so that makes a lot of sense. What will they do? There has to be some response in the works. MLP going to do? Let's go ahead.
Well, I don't know when this podcast is going to be released, but I was told on Tuesday, which is what, today's the 7th, on the 8th of November, MLP will be announcing a new sponsor as well as a new team owner. I don't know if that'll be the final team owner, because I've heard that they're going to go to 18 teams. I'm not sure if that's confirmed, because the initial was the expansion from 12 teams to 16 teams, but I think you heard the same, right? They might be going to 18 teams, which just means more investment for the league and more players, you know, an opportunity to be a part of MLP.
Right. So I think they were kind of forced into going to 18 by the star power of the extra owners that wanted to be involved. And I do not know the names, but that's kind of how I understood it, is that kind of an offer they couldn't refuse to add two more teams to go to 18.
Well, it's pure speculation. I don't have anything confirmed, but like pure, there's been a lot of rumors about Serena getting a team in MLP. Mm-hmm. And I think just this morning I saw the PPA Tour Instagram account say something about Serena Williams and Vibe with like the little eye emoji.
Ooh, interesting. Yeah. And a very good, I believe it was her agent for a good portion of her career, if not all of it, Linda Long, is very involved in the pickleball side of things, representing a few players and whatever. And I know they have a very strong, you know, business and off tennis court relationship. So it's at least some little segue or some little connection that might bring Serena into the pickleball world. We'll just have to see.
And honestly, so you asked what does MLP need to do? And in my opinion, like announcing a new celebrity team owner and a new sponsor, great. Like that's like, I don't know. I think all of the celebrities hopping on board as team owners, it's a little like, cause right now if you're MLP, you're battling Vibe. Vibe just announced a new league, a competitor to MLP. Like, what's going to determine your success? It's like, we've already seen JW and Dylan jump from MLP to Vibe. Like if you're Tom Brady, Kevin Durant, all these guys, LeBron James, do you want to have ownership in a league that doesn't have top talent or the top talent or the, you know, so it doesn't I mean, I don't think it needs to be every top five or every top 10 player, but you definitely need some of those players to actually be a competitor, right? Otherwise you are, you're feeding into Vibe. You know, it does turn into a feeder system a little bit. And I know that's not what they want. They want to be the premier talent. I know they have, you know, some focus on minor league pickleball, which is, I think, awesome for the amateur game and going to grow the sport like crazy all over the country and hopefully all over the world. It's just a matter of what do they want, right? Do they want to be a premier pro league? If so, you got to do something to lock down your top talent. Like, just announcing new celebrity owners and new sponsors isn't necessarily going to get, it's going to get news. It's going to hit a news cycle for 24 hours, 48 hours, but it's not going to actually do anything in terms of making sure your league's a sustainable, viable success as a business.
How about this, Robert? Throw in a little prof here. Law of diminishing returns. You make that first announcement of a big time celebrity, and then each subsequent one is nice, but it doesn't have that same hard hitting that the first one or two or three do. So I think that's a great statement and makes a lot of sense. I went to the Vibe webpage, and so just to, you know, check out what they had on there, and they just had a little couple paragraphs talking about things, and their claim is to have the top five male and female pros. And with signing JW and Dylan, I think that is a very fair statement on the men's side. I'm not so sure that they have the top five women. Obviously their roster of women is fantastic. Annalie Waters, Callie, Lucy, Jesse, Catherine, Lee Waters, Dijon Mustard, Elise, and Yana Newell. So, either way, the names on both sides are very impressive. And then the classic male PPA players as well. We have CJ's brother, Matt Wright, Riley, CJ, Tyson McGuffin, Callan, Jay DeVillier, JW, Dylan Frazier, Pat Smith, Deacon, and Spencer Smith. So pretty solid roster. And we'll just have to see. I'm just a little worried that there might be a couple people, you know, making that walk between leagues that we haven't heard about yet. And we'll just have to see.
Yeah, I think that's a fair statement. I think probably not top five on the women's side, but definitely top five on the men's side.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I think also in terms of Vibe, you're going to have new partnerships based on how the draft works and how the teams get split up. But I just wonder if it's still going to be a little stale. Like, I think what people really like about MLP and APP is seeing the new talent come in and seeing them compete with some of the existing top players and seeing them break through. Like, there's like, everybody loves that story, right? Everybody loves finding somebody new, seeing somebody new break through. And that's the one thing that I wonder if, you know, while PPA is kind of locked in that top talent, it gets stale. So I feel like they need to figure out a way to also be able to bring in new talent that's going to keep it exciting. Because if there's one knock on the PPA, it's that the matchups get boring. And I could see matchups get boring even if they do mix up teams.
Yeah, right. So just say no one else comes along, and I don't even know what the format will be. I mean, probably it'll be four players per team, but maybe not. It could be a different format, especially only having six teams. So, you know, you're talking about with this group of players, you know, you have, you know, Riley kind of playing with maybe a Pat Smith, a Deacon, or a Spencer Smith. And then you have Anna Lee Waters playing with, you know, Elise, Dijon Mustard, or Yana Newell. So, you know, it is a pretty big gap. And I think that maybe the amount of players that they have in the PPA allows there to be that gap. And then in the MLP, it's probably the amount of teams that allows some of that talent to be spread apart. So
yeah,
it's very interesting. Very, very interesting. I know I've already said it a few times, you know, time will tell, we'll just have to see. And I'm very excited for the next week or two, or possibly between now in January 1, where a lot more information is going to be coming out. And it's whatever side you're on, if you are on a side, it doesn't matter. It's still exciting stuff to hear this information and whatever else. So
I've had a few people reach out, like, is this like, what's going on? Like, these are people that aren't really aware and intimate of the pro scene and what's happening in the fragmentation. They're like, well, I saw this new league with Mark Cuban. Is this a good thing? I'm like long term, it's another, you know, if you're looking at the landscape, they just chiseled off another piece, right? So it's mm-hmm. even more fragmented. Mm-hmm. Is it good for the game long term? If Vibe wins this race of the leagues, could be good. But generally speaking, you know, more fragmentation is not great in the long term, because it's just going to be something that needs to be put back together again to create a whole, which is I think everybody or most of our goals in pro pickleball is to have, you know, a single league, a single tour where all the top pros are playing each other week in, week out, because that's the most exciting product out there. Which we just don't have that right now, which is why Nationals is going to be fun to watch this year, because you're going to have, you know, you have both tours competing at Nationals, US Open, places like that. So it's one of the tournaments where we get to see all the top talent be there, even though the draws aren't very big and a lot of people aren't going. It's still a place where, you know, many of the top players go to compete against each other. And in terms of long term, I don't think it's great, but short term, it's having these leagues compete for players, right? Like, to, mm-hmm. and I said, I think last episode, for Vibe to get JW and Dylan, they didn't, you know, that offer had to be legit. That they didn't offer comparable money to what MLP was going to pay. Like, it had to be a significant 3x, 4x of what they would have made at MLP, in my opinion, for that to make sense for them.
I there's no question it's north of six figures, in my opinion. Maybe I'm completely wrong. I don't know, but you know, maybe north of six figures is strong, but right around that six figure range. So I agree with you completely.
Yeah. And I think in terms of what MLP, you asked, like, what does MLP need to do? I think outside of announcing a new celebrity team owner, outside of announcing a new sponsor, you have to lock down players somehow. That's either going to be by paying them more money to not go to Vibe. It's going to have to be, you know, I talked to Steve a little bit, and he wants, like, his goal with MLP is to grow players' brands, personal brands, and help them explode that way, which is a great promise. It's a great, you know, they have to execute it, right? But it's a fantastic thing, and it's what will actually get players paid the most, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. You know, by attracting more sponsorship deals, by having a larger following online and social media. But that's not, you know, in this day and age of pro pickleball, where prize money and earnings aren't super significant unless you're in like the top 3, 4, 5, players are going to want short-term gratification right now, right? Because they're trying to survive the year. They're not looking at, like, what's best for me in 5 years, mm-hmm. which, you know, maybe it's short-sighted, but at the same time, you need money now. So I understand. And I think to hold on to players right now, you know, Vibe did it. Like, you got to pay them. So I think, you know, we'll see what MLP does, but I think you're going to have to pay the players. And I know MLP, they're, you know, they've got, if they have 18 teams, you're spreading to what, 72 players now, 36 men, 36 women. And while MLP pays easily the best, you know, throughout the whole league, you know, these top players like JW and Dylan maybe aren't getting what, you know, what they think they could get, which is why they jumped to a Vibe.
And let's be clear, if it's the same format or a similar format to MLP, that's 24 players versus 72 players. That's a lot of extra money that can go to those higher end players, right? As opposed to a kind of a more balanced payout structure. So, it makes sense. And I think that's just an easy way, you know, to describe it. Is pretty good for the players right now. Not so sure it's great for getting pickleball in schools, Olympics, those kind of things that are really important for the future with the fragmentation that it's created. So I think that that's pretty good conversation on the little bit of extra info that we had on the two leagues. What do you say we take a look at this Texas Open PPA that happened in Rockwall? So we're going to go through with a little recap. I got my very official notes here, Robert.
I'm just ready to talk about Podium Deacon. His return. Oh, he's back. Podium Deacon. Let's go.
Canada's finest. Stevie D back in business. Very exciting.
But where did you start? Is it the Beaver, right? He's the Beaver.
Oh, he's the Beaver. And it used to be the Beaver and the Badger. And, you know, so that was good times there for a year or so when he was playing with Dave Weinbach, the Beaver and the Badger. Just good stuff. But we're going to start it off with women's singles here, Robert. And we have Annalee Waters, gold, Leia Silver, and Catherine Parento with the bronze. We had a couple highlights of that draw. We had Annalee going three with Anna Bright and Davidze. Leia beating Catherine Parento in three to make it to Championship Sunday. And we had legend of the game veteran Irina Tereshchenko pulling out in the middle of her match with Davidze. Hope everything's okay there. Not positive. And
she smoked Davidze last time they played, right? It was like in straight games and pretty routine, I think.
Right. And it was, you know, not like, obviously not a crazy result, but it was a little surprising to see how comfortable Irina won that match.
Yeah.
And then we had Catherine Parento coming back through and capturing that bronze and beating Davidze pretty handily, 11-5, 11-5 in the bronze medal match. So, obviously, women's singles, one of our smaller recaps as there's many less players in the pool, but I think that pretty much sums it up. Nothing too crazy. Maybe Annalee pushed to three a couple times is something considering how great she's been playing lately. But also,
good result for Leia.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, to make it, I guess, I don't know. I know she hasn't played a couple tournaments and maybe not made Championship Sunday a couple times recently, but obviously still a single stud. And good result from her. Let's see. Oh, also, yes. In the women's doubles match, we had Annalee kind of having an issue with her knee. So she had to call a medical timeout and get a knee brace on, was walking fairly gingerly through the first 10 or 15 minutes back into play after the injury timeout, but it didn't seem to be affecting her drastically in her mixed or her singles results. So just something to monitor. Looked like it could possibly be something bad, but it turns out that it's probably more of a tweak or something along those lines as opposed to something serious. So that's always good to see. So we have men's singles next. We have Brandon Lane beating Dylan Frazier in the round of 16. Very surprising result. And it wasn't lopsided, but it wasn't particularly close either. I do not know Brandon Lane.
Yeah. So, I played him in mixed in Houston, and I was not in singles. So obviously I didn't see a singles game, but pretty impressed with like just strokes, touch, feel. I can see him being good at singles, but definitely a surprising result because I don't know if he's played much singles prior to this tournament. But to beat Dill is impressive. Straight games.
Yeah, beat Dill at anything pickleball related is impressive. So yeah, shout out to Brandon. Nice run. We also had a nice run from Pablo Tellez, not Tellez, Tellez, and beating Jay Delivers and Baby K. So really, really nice job getting to the semifinals by Pablo, beating two very, very good players along the way.
Pablito's had a nice little breakout year, I tell you what. He was down in, when I lived in Estero, he was down there, didn't play. Like, we played a little bit together, but he wasn't playing a lot of pickleball. He was coaching a ton of tennis. Mm-hmm. And it feels like this year he's focused a lot more on pickleball. It helps, like, you know, having Simone down there. She helps practice with these guys, train them. They take it seriously, right? Like, I remember when I was down there, we'd have legit practice sessions, which, you know, is strange for pickleball, right? But it'd be like a structured practice where we're doing this drill between this time, and then we're playing some points, and then we're doing footwork drills, and then we're doing sprints. Like, it's like a legit college tennis practice, or like... Yeah, so-
sounds like a big reason why these people are better than me now. I totally get it. And I've been down there and jumped in some of those little more structured practices, and it's still light and fun, but it's different than your casual rec game for sure. When they get together and get some touches and kind of put a sequence of drills and play together. People taking it serious. You know, it's been happening for a while, and it's just going to continue.
Yeah.
When
there is money involved and there are games,
people are good at things. Yeah, people are good at things, especially when it involves money and playing games. Yes. We had TM Tyson McGuffin with obviously a nice run and the singles draw and beating Julian Arnold handily. I believe it was in the quarterfinals, but Julian's been steamrolling some people, playing some great singles. So
yeah,
to be honest, Julian is that low floor, high ceiling player. And yeah, you got to give credit to TM for doing what he needed to do. But Julian was not on in that match. And that's just part of the deal when you're a big time shot maker. Sometimes that floor falls out from underneath you. And I think that's part of what happened in that match with Julian and Tyson.
And I didn't see this match, so I don't know, but just it's also very, very hard. Like, he's an energy player. Like, he plays, like, he needs high energy, high motivation to, like, he performs well under that. And if, mm-hmm, like, it's hard to maintain. Like, we talk about how taxing it is week in, week out. You talked about it last week with, like, kind of the mental stuff and the anxiety and, like, how it does take a toll. Mm-hmm. Week after week being on tour, and to do what he does, the way he plays, to do that week in and week out is really, really difficult on an energy basis, you know? So if you don't, if that energy is lacking a little bit mentally, physically, you're not going to get the same results as you would if you're, you know, super, super hyped and super stoked to be there.
No, and I think that makes a lot of sense. It's probably one of the advantages to go the JW even keel route, you know? Yeah. So I always think of it in like the NCAA tournament, you know, you have an upset in round one or two, and then the next round they just get absolutely destroyed because they put all the emotions went into it. They put everything that they had, and then it's just hard to get back to that level of emotional intensity match after match, week after week. So I think that's a really good statement, and there's something to be said for that.
We call that blowing your load too early.
Oh, yes. That is a thing. Another way. Hey, TM had a nice run. So I'll quote him. Premature ejaculation, you know?
That's a classic. Premature ejaculation.
Yeah, that's always a classic. So, definitely great job by TM to get that. And then we had a nice run by Christian Alshon, who had some trickery, some sick tricks out there with some tweeners and some flippers going behind him.
He's an athlete.
He is. And I looked up his tennis background. Very good. 5-star recruit, really highly ranked, maybe even possibly, you know, one or two in 16s, juniors or something along those lines. So high end talent. Well, obviously already quickly relevant in singles. We'll see how his doubles game develops, but yeah, he's an athlete, like you said. So yeah, nice to see him pushing some people and getting some nice wins as well. Julian and Baby K, Gabriel Joseph, had nice runs in the back draw, with Julian eventually taking the bronze medal. So and then of course we have to talk about you know, Colin's brother versus Tyson. And yeah, it was weird. It was only two games. Not exactly sure why that happened.
Nobody knew it.
Yeah, nobody knew it. The announcers, no one had any idea. Tyson for sure knew it. I have no idea how many times he's lost. They had a real back and forth early in the career, and it's been a lot of, you know, a lot of Colin's brother since then. So I think that, you know, obviously a great result from Tyson, and I don't know if it was because there were some rain delay issues with the mixed the previous day, kind of adding it on to the gender at the end of the day, or it was just, you know, the PPA superstars making it easier for them to have a triple crown possibility and the grind of a possible 15-game championship Sunday is definitely pretty.
Yeah, we've already heard the, you know, Anna Lee did an interview, I think after one of the matches, saying she doesn't like the, she doesn't like the long days in the best of five. So I'm sure, sure there is some influence there in terms of, you know, shortening some of the singles.
And there, while there might be some, you know, people that have something to say about them having that pull or that influence, there is, it does make some sense as well. Let's be clear. So yeah. Singles is a big grind. And if you are going to have one event go to 2 out of 3, obviously singles is the best one to do it.
For
so
sure.
I don't hate it. It would be obviously interesting to know exactly the reasoning behind it.
You know who else doesn't hate it?
Who's that?
TM, bro.
And of course we had, we had the lovely, lovely picture of the soaking wet mullet chugging the beer after, just really nice. The only thing I have to say about that is, you know, I haven't hung out with TM in a while, good buddies early in our careers, but it's got to be an IPA, Tyson. Come on, Michelob Ultra. Mm. That's not a mullet kind of beer. So that's my only qualm with
actually,
that.
It should have been like a Natty Light.
Natty Light, right. Maybe an old Milwaukee, possibly Milwaukee's best. But yeah, either way, great job from Tyson. And anyone who wants to chug an alcoholic beverage after they get a big win, I am all for it. So good stuff there.
It's just good people.
It's just good people. So let's move on here. We got some mixed action. We have Jesse and Jay Delivers. They beat Rettenmeyer and Etta Wright early in the day pretty handily, and we'll have more on that a little bit later. Smith and Kohler, Callie Smith, AJ Kohler losing fairly early to Callan and Dijon Mustard. Definitely a slight upset there.
Yeah.
Or maybe not a slight upset. Nice win for – great tournament from Tyson. Nice win from TM and Lee beating Lucy and Matt, which I didn't get to see, but I would have loved to. And a fairly tight one going 3 games with Anna Lee and Collins Brother in the semifinals. So nice run from Lee Waters and Tyson McGuffin. We have a 3-game win in the gold medal match from Anna Lee. And it went 3, but 2 of those 3 games were 11-3, 11-0. I believe there was a 12-10 game as well. But it looked to me like Riley was definitely, you know, trying to do too much. And that isn't necessarily a knock on him. If the scores or the situation's very dire, it's okay for him to try to do that. And I think it's kind of human nature, especially a competitor like Riley. So definitely overextending, but maybe he felt like he needed to in the specific matchup that they were in.
Yeah.
And I played a tournament with Riley a couple of years ago in the Dave Weinbach Spreading the Pickleball Love Tour tournament in Arizona. Ooh. And we'll just say in the gold medal match, I went in the black hole for a few minutes and Riley was very much on my side of the court, you know, doing what he needed to do. So he's a competitor. If he feels like things aren't going great, he's gonna push the limits and overextend, where maybe someone like JW might just take what's happening and not overextend. So a little interesting there.
Let's talk really quickly about, you mentioned black hole. I think maybe the casual viewer doesn't think, maybe they don't know what it means or what we're referring to, or that it happens to pros, but it's a real thing, this black hole. It's happened to me quite a few times. I know it's happened to all of us, really. So
all of us.
Elaborate a little bit.
Yeah. So the black hole, it's kind of a mix. Basically, it's when it starts, it's very mental. It's very mental. It's just a space you go into. It could be a couple loose shots or a couple physical shots that kind of bring you to that point. But it's kind of, you get in this, stuck in this rut, kind of deer in headlights, kind of stunned. And sometimes sometimes you come out of it quickly, and sometimes you kind of stay in that black hole for 5, 6, 10 minutes. And that's very tough in the pickleball world with how quick things happen. So it could be triggered by a lot of things. And I think I've gotten better at later in my career of coming out of that. But once you're in that black hole and things kind of snowball with a few errors, maybe some soft errors, third shots and dinks, it leaks into mentally, and it's tough to get out of that. Irina Tereshchenko, one of the originators of the black hole, she used to go into that black hole so deep, and she's much better about it lately. But it's tough, and it's kind of that blend of physical and mental that gets you into that place, and it's just difficult to come out of it, especially with, you know, points happening like this, and sometimes you never get out of it. The match is just over.
Especially in rally at like MLP. Like I was playing with Irina the very first MLP BLQK. And I remember we were playing mix, and we were playing Andre Daescu and Lee Waters. Mm-hmm. And Irina kept saying, I had missed a couple like soft dinks because Andre's so long that I popped them up. It wouldn't have been a pop-up to anybody else, but he was poking so well and reaching any so long. And Irina's like, all we have to do is make Andre hit forehand dinks. Cause Lee was playing the left. Andre was playing the right.
Gotcha. Yes.
And right. Irina's just like, make him hit forehand dinks. He can't do it. I'm like, I can't dink to his forehand. I cannot do it. I don't know how to dink over there. It's not going to happen. I'm not going to like, and we were like fighting each other. I'm like, I just can't do it. Like, you could give me $1 million. I can't dink to his forehand. I'm just going to hit the Lee Waters.
Right. Yeah. And
that's a black hole.
Yes. And I also remember in Indianapolis, I believe it was Indianapolis, we were playing Pat and Jay, and you just lost your third shot. And you were just like, I was playing on the right, and you were like, you got to take the thirds. You got to take the thirds. And that it was for 10 or 15 minutes. And then you found it again, you know, and then you're like, okay, it's all good. Let's play our sides now. It's like, okay, all right, fine. You know, so
he's back. Welcome.
Yeah. Sometimes you lose it. Sometimes you get it back. Sometimes you lose it. You never get it back, but black holes are real. And,
remember in Hellhead when you missed like four dinks in a row, I was like, I've never seen this. You've never missed.
Right. Like I said, I get lit up with the best of them. Let's be clear about that. Yeah. But missing four dinks in a matter of 5 minutes is something that I don't think has ever happened in my career. So
the black hole is real.
It's, and I was there. I think I got that black. I think I came out of the black hole with vomiting 2 gallons of water during that tournament. I think that snapped me out of it. And you actually carried me to bronze in that match. We had a couple of nice wins in the back draw. So got to get out of it. You're going to go into that hole. Just get out of it as soon as you can. Don't let it linger. That's my best advice.
Well, the question is, how do you get out of it? So I don't know if I have an answer for that. But
right. Fake an ankle roll and get a medical timeout.
Take a break somehow.
Yes. Okay. So what are we doing?
Your recap. Sorry, I derailed us a little bit, but I like
– No. Okay. No, it's good. Okay. All right. Yes, here we go. So let's move on to the women's doubles that happened at the PPA Texas Open, it was in Rockwall, which is a suburb kind of northeast of Dallas. We have Jesse Irvin and Anna Bright winning in three against Kovalova and Smith in the semifinals. And it was a very intense match. I believe Cuban showed up during this match, and there was high fist pumps, finger wagging, kind of barking at opponents right from the start. So very interesting kind of dynamic in that match. No idea if there's weird bad blood weird beef, which is always a possibility in the pickleball world. Maybe they just, you know, Anna Bright's been having some success. They wanted to knock her down because they're the veterans with all the credentials, and Anna's kind of a newcomer. Don't know exactly what it was, but it was a pretty entertaining match. And there was a lot of fire on the court.
I'm gonna text Lucy real quick, see if there's any beef.
Oh, there you go. Insider info. And while you're doing that, we had we had an odd double withdrawal. So yeah, something must have happened to Irina. Must have. Maybe I should text her and figure that out. But Irina was matched up with Etta Wright. And their opponent's first round pulled out, and then they pulled out. So they never played a match. So Parento and Jansen were into the semifinals without even playing a match. And I think it was like 5 p.m. or something, and it was their first match of the day, which is obviously an interesting situation and tough to deal with sometimes. And they ended up playing the Waters in the second semifinal and losing. Not a very lopsided match, but not a tight match either. 11-5, 11-8. So, yeah.
So and Irina, then, so Irina pulled out a singles, right? Mid mm-hmm. mid Davidze match, mm-hmm. which was that was Thursday. Did she play mixed?
I don't know. We'll find. No,
no. I think she did. She played. Didn't she play with Thomas Wilson? So she pulled out. She pulled out Thursday for singles. I think she played with Thomas
Wilson on Friday, and then
pulled out of gender.
Yeah. Oh, so okay. I'll try to figure that out. But and just for you guys that don't know, if I believe on the draw, if it says retirement, that means you pulled out mid match, and withdraw means you pulled out before the match. Just something there. You will see those different things. And then we had the Waters versus Irvin and Bright. 11-4, 5-11, 11-4, 11-7, four games in the final to take gold. And it was obviously they had that blip in game two, losing 11-5, but 11-4, 11-4, 11-7 is pretty solid, obviously. And I was doing some stuff around the house. So I was kind of in and out on that match, but it did seem to me, obviously a small sample, not seeing all of it, but it looked to me that Jesse was struggling a little bit with some inconsistencies. That was obviously a little unusual for her. I think occasionally she gets a little attackable or misses some counterattacks, but you almost never see her miss some of the soft stuff. Uh-uh. So she's a rock out there. So, you know, like I said, I didn't get to see all of it, but that was kind of my take on it. And big shout out to Lee Waters playing well. And, you know, they kind of stuck with Lee even after that little knee tweak from Anna Lee. And Lee played well and kind of handled getting most of the balls and fairly comfortable gold medal for the Waters.
Yep.
Okay. And what is the last one? Men's doubles? Yeah, it's men's doubles. We haven't talked about that, which is obviously my favorite to talk about.
Stevie D,
Steve Podium Deegan.
This is the only story that matters for the Texas Open.
Let's go. So
he's back.
That's right. Steve Deegan.
49 years young.
49 years. but yes, so he matched up with James Ignatowicz. And let me take a little look.
Jimmy.
So they lost fairly early. Yes, they lost second round to AJ Kohler and Thomas Wilson. And then obviously getting bronze, a very nice steamroll through the back draw.
And I think they took down Kohler Wilson in the back, right?
I believe that is correct. Yes. So we had Colin in the quarterfinals going 3 with Smith and Loom, Spencer Smith and Tyler Loom. So that was a really close match there. And then we also had 3 games against Rettenmeyer and Burrows in the semifinals, who had a nice win over Callan Dawson and Pat Smith. So really nice job by Rettenmeyer and Burrows, who came back through and got 4th in this very deep field. Congratulations to them. And we also didn't mention in mixed that Rettenmeyer and Etta Wright came through with a bronze. And your fault for getting me distracted, because that's why I mentioned Jesse and Jay DeVillier beating them pretty handily earlier in the draw. Well, they came back through and ended up beating Jay and Jesse in the bronze medal match. So
Rettenmeyer with a big, big breakout tournament.
3rd and 4th. Fantastic result from Rettenmeyer, who, you know, I think is always kind of had that nice thunder punch right here, but he's kind of adding some tricks and some other things to his game. And I think he's going to be taking pickleball more seriously in 2023, I believe. So I think he has had some, you know, regular work kind of balanced with some life stuff, balanced with some pickleball. And I think he's going to go a little more full force, kind of maybe the same way that Fudge and Ryler DeHart are going to can play a lot more and take it more serious in 2023. Just a couple of the many that are going to start taking pickleball much more seriously. So nice job by him, and we'll see what kind of improvements he can make moving forward. We also have Kohler and Wilson beating Jay DeVillier and Tyson McGuffin pretty handily in the quarterfinals, 11-2, 11-7, and then eventually losing to Wright and Newman in that semifinal matchup. And a very interesting quarterfinal between DJ Young and Dylan Frazier versus Wright and Newman. And I believe Frazier and Young were up 11-1 and 5-0.
Yeah,
in this match. Yeah, I watched that one too. And Baby Dill was just doing his thing. DJ was picking his spots nicely. Really an all-out barrage and some great hand speed and put away power from DJ and Dylan. And it's so hard in these moments because it worked so well in the first half of that match. But I think that Riley and Matt, the veterans that they are, kind of were a little more on their counterattacks as the match progressed.
Yeah.
And DJ and Dylan just kept firing away. And like I said, so hard to make those in-match adjustments, especially when it's working so well. But I think if they pulled just a little bit off of the gas, they might have had a better chance to win this one, even though they were in a great place to win this match in game two. So, yeah, really, really enjoyed that match. And it was nice to see, you know, it being so tight and kind of seeing, you know, seeing any of these players in big spots in games and match points for your opponents is always entertaining as a viewer.
Interesting to see DJ settling into the right side, played the right side with Deckel, obviously, and did well, and then played the right side with Dylan. And whenever I would practice with DJ, he's really good on the right side. Like he's got good disguise deception, just like he does on the left. But for a lot of guys going from the left, which you typically guys that can create really well, especially off the bounce, that are long, that move well, like DJ, you know, are typically like left side players. Mm-hmm. Like you're an offensive player, but he's able to take all that stuff to the right side and not get super uncomfortable. His forehand dinks good. I saw him. He's like, once the match started turning and Matt and Riley started getting some momentum, he kept some of the dinks popped up from the right side. Mm-hmm. But that's going to happen. But it's interesting to see that kind of like, somebody with all the tools that he has mm-hmm. be on the right side, because typically it's guys that are more limited in what they can do and they just get really narrow with their skill set, forehand, dink, backhand, counter, slide, right. Some of that stuff, right? But he's got a lot more tools, which good and bad, right? Because mm-hmm. sometimes too many options are, you know, it's not a good thing.
Right. And I really, even though they did not win in Houston, I saw some real like commitment to the right from DJ with Deckel, and even some spots where he might have been able to attack and just kept grinding. And that's mm-hmm. super important. You have to balance that out. And obviously he has a skill set where he can be aggressive. So he can pick spots to attack that maybe other players can't, but to occasionally get in that grind mode and pass up a couple like okay opportunities mm-hmm. to get a better opportunity to attack, that's a great skill set for the right side player. And I think maybe one of the times he might get a little bit exposed on the left is when he has to counter attack such a wide range. When he can really focus on that backhand, which is his preferred counter attack on the backhand side, and have less room to cover for counters, I think that kind of eliminates maybe not a weakness, but one of the he might not be amazing at on the left. And that's, you know, that's picking some nits, but just kind of how I saw it. And just to kind of finish up the men's draw, we'll just talk about some of these back draw matches. We obviously had Colin winning gold, Riley and Matt getting silver, and then we mentioned Steve and James Ignatowicz getting bronze. And a quick thing too on that, obviously DeVilliers and McGuffin, fantastic team, but I think this has happened to me multiple times in a tournament where I get really close or have a great spot to make an upset in the main draw. I get dropped to the back draw and that energy is low. And obviously losing to McGuffin and DeVilliers is not surprising, but to lose 15-5, I think that shows a little emotional letdown after being in that big spot and not being able to come through. So
who lost 15-5? Sorry.
Frazier and Young after that. Yeah. So in their first round of the back draw. So like I said, great team, DeVilliers and McGuffin, but to lose 15-5, I think there was probably a little emotional letdown from being so close to getting Riley and Matt.
Yeah.
That's and awesome. We have, let's see, we have Rettenmeier and Burrows defeating DeVilliers and McGuffin. Great win from them, 15-13. We had Deacon and Ignatowicz beating Spencer Smith and Tyler Leung. We had them beating Callan Dawson and Pat Smith, and they also beat Kohler and Wilson, and then ended up winning the bronze 11-9, 8-11, 12-10, and no one could watch it.
Absolute battle.
Yes, absolute battle. I mean, I know.
Honestly, you know, it would have been the best match of probably the tournament.
No, you know, Rhett Meyer was mouthing stuff and you know, sounding off like he always does. And yeah. And Ignatowicz handles that well and gives it back. You know, it was just a spectacular match and very sad I wasn't able to watch that
one. Especially Stevie D. Like he's a happy go lucky smiley man, but he's fiery on court. He doesn't
He's a competitor. He's a competitor through and through. So very, very sad that I wasn't able to watch that. And you know,
I think it's a big complaint, right? It's like, there's been many a times where I'm watching PPA and like they show the semis and then that's done and they're done with the stream.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any reason that you know of why they don't show the bronze match?
I mean, they don't even have to, I don't know. I mean, they don't even have to have commentators, just put it on the stream, you know, and just leave it there for the fans, because those are some of the best matches. It's the
100%.
Different matchups, the fifth, sixth spot match, the play in to get to bronze and the bronze medal match are some of my favorite matches to watch. And sometimes you happen to get to see one or two of them. And most of the time you don't get to see any of them, which I think is very sad.
Like CVD and Ignatowicz, they lost early. I don't know how many wins they had to win in the back to get to the bronze, but I mean, they had a day.
Probably six or seven. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. They had a long day, and then and then not to be able to see that bronze is super disappointing, because it would have been, especially that scoreline, it would have been a ridiculous match. Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah. And I even feel like maybe watching some of the CC1 matches, you heard some yelling of some sort, or like you said, with that score and those players on court, there was high level play and high level chatter going on, and you know, the vibe was awesome to watch. So too bad, but you know, what can you do?
I think, you know, on your point of not even needing commentators, I know you're going into a commentary career next year, but some of the, like for me, I would almost rather watch a match, especially with guys like that, you know, are like fiery, you know, chirping. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I would rather just have, you know, hot mics all over that court, on the net, on the side of the net, on the post, near the baseline, just so you can pick up player commentary, because that's the most interesting stuff, right? It's like I would watch that and not listen to commentary all day long.
Yes.
So like some of these outside courts that could be streamed, you don't need a big setup. Just throw a freaking GoPro up there. Just shoot it from the back, one stationary camera. Put some good mics all over the court and just let that thing roll all day. Cause you would get great viewership.
I agree. And I even like some of the commentary I've done in single, say it was Julian playing Rafa Hewitt or something like that. I talk less, you know, because they're giving, I mean, that's what's going on. The match and the banter, that's what's awesome. So if I'm commentating JW or somebody, if I'm commentating JW or somebody, I got to fill the gaps. You know, there's less energy on the court. But if it's Julian versus Rafa, I might go two or three points without saying anything and just let them go. And I think that's a great statement, Rob. And I always associate things with poker. I like to watch the poker streams, and the commentators do a good job. When there's good table talk going on, either during a hand or in between hands, they don't say anything. They just let the guys go. And I think that would be great for pickleball as well. Turn up the net cam, the net mic, and turn up a couple of the mics on the side of the court, and let the guys and gals, you know, really show what's going on out there on court. And I think that's a great idea. And it's got to change, because these matches are just too good not to show.
Yep. You know, that's spoken like a true high level content creator.
Well, I mean, that's what I am, Robert. I mean, don't forget a high-end pickleball influencer as well.
Yes. No, I mean, they go hand in hand.
Thank you. Okay. All right. Let's take a little look-see at Nationals. Have a couple interesting matchups. Yep. Teams. I think that there was some whatever about, we obviously know about, you know, needing a vaccine in previous years. And I think they kind of let up on that. I don't know exactly when they decided you just had to get tested. So I think there is a couple teams that I think that was affected by, and now kind of everybody is available to come. So what's that?
I'm just going to fill up my coffee cup.
Okay. Yeah. I'll keep going. So let's see here. I got the men's draw pulled up, and we have the Romanian Towers in the house, Edin Lica and Andre Daescu, who I believe right before the pandemic snagged a silver medal.
Yep,
silver nationals. So the Romanian Towers back in business. We have Julian Arnold and Kyle Yates. I do not believe that we have seen that, but that could be a good partnership. I do think Kyle is best on the right and Julian is best on the left. So that could match up nicely. We have, very interesting. We have DJ Young and Tyler Loon. So
that's a new one, I think.
Almost certain. I have not seen that matchup. So that a lot of athleticism out there. You know, that could work.
DJ we talked back about on DJ, the left.
Yeah, we talked about DJ on the right, but obviously DJ played most of his court time has been on the left side, and Tyler Loon being the left-hander makes a lot of sense. We got the classic Jay and Tyson. We got the singles guys who I can't call singles guys anymore. James Ignatowicz and Federico Staxrud playing together. Here's my dark horse, Rob. Here's my dark horse for this tournament. Stefan Ondrejan and Mills Miller in the main draw of pro doubles.
Millsy. Millsy.
Legend of the game.
I just had the McMacken twins were just on the island here in Maui. Spent some time with them over the past few days, and they said they're spending a lot of time with Millsy right now down in San Diego.
I'll tell you what, those guys scream Southern California. Just the nicest guys.
Sweethearts.
Positive energy. You can't help but enjoy your time around those fellas. We have another funny, interesting one. We have Jeffrey Warnick and Zane Navratil. That's a very nice over under 11 dinks in the tournament for that team. I think they're probably at their best, really ripping the ball early in the point, and they get more in those structured patterns. I'd be careful because Jeff occasionally struggles with the dinking and the soft stuff. But if they can stop the ball from touching the ground and put in some kamikaze, not sure they can medal, but they can ruin someone's day for sure. Well,
it's not too hot out there. The ball will fly.
Yeah, right. Yeah, dry.
Could be good conditions for some shake and bake.
Yep, cool in the mornings. We got the cousins, AJ Kohler, Thomas Wilson, interesting team. We got the cousins. Now we got the twins, the Johnson twins. We have Wesley Burrows and Travis Rettenmeier again.
Okay.
We have Jose Farias and the Unicorn.
Mm-hmm.
We have the classic PNW pairing of Wes Gabrielson and Eric Lang.
Lovely.
Pablo Tellez and Hayden Patraquin.
I love how well you're doing with Pablo's name.
Yeah, I know. He didn't say anything. I mispronounced it so many times. He didn't say anything. Apologize to you, Pablo.
Pablito.
And El Bandito, not to be confused with El Bandito, Gabriel Tardio. So J.W. Johnson and Dekel Barr. And here is a very interesting one. Rafa Hewitt and Dylan Frazier.
That is super interesting.
Super interesting. So as you like to say, Dylan Frazier, the most versatile man in the game. So him moving from the right to the left should not be an issue.
He's unfazed.
A lot of firepower. Rafa Hewitt playing better these days. He's one of those high ceiling, low floor kind of guys where he occasionally.
My only concern with Rafa is if he'll bring the energy.
yeah, that's pretty laughable. He's gonna bring the energy, and you know he just likes out on the ranch. They just eat chips and drink Coca-Cola Classic. That's what they do. So, dad bod with kids, Rafa Hewitt. I think that could be a very interesting pairing, and it's probably pretty awkward to play them.
That'll be fun, man. Like, there's a lot of unique matchups and teams and. You know, I think it seems like we should probably do some commentary for it via remote.
Seems like we should. I don't know if USA Nationals will appreciate that, considering, you know, we're just fuego on the mic. We might take some of their viewers, but, you know.
If they would have let us in the tournament, we wouldn't be commentating on it.
There you go. We couldn't get in. Yeah, so that was interesting, Rob. It was obviously last minute, but Rob and myself and the prof and myself tried to get in, but they capped it at 32 and there was no way around it. So, I mean, I'm, you know, I could have played, but I think it's reasonable to cap tournaments. And, you know, I don't know if they, you know, should have let us in maybe because we're slightly known players or whatever, but, I think that'll be something moving forward. That's going to happen a lot, capping tournaments at a certain amount. And 32 seems like a good number.
Well, capping, sure. But, like if you look at like a pro tennis tournament, of course you cap it, but you take the highest ranked players.
Right. Right.
You know what I mean? So yeah, I don't know. I just feel like it's not even just nationals. I feel like there's always, even like with the tours, it's always, and more so my experience with the APP is just not letting in really high level players. I'm not talking about myself. I'm talking, you know, there's on the female side, I know Viv Davids tried to get into tournaments last minute and they just are like, no. And without much good reason, right? The draws haven't been released yet. There's space for another team. And it's just based on like, you should want high ranked players at your tournament playing your pro event. Make exceptions, right? Like just keep that door open until the draw is made. If there's space, like, why would you just say no because registration's closed? It's so silly. Like, registration and all that stuff should be for the amateur side. You know, you want pro players in your draws, especially high ranked ones that will bring more eyeballs and more fans. So I don't know. I think all of that stuff's been pretty weird and strange over the last couple of years. And hopefully that changes where they're a little bit more accommodating to pros in terms of getting into draws last minute. Just an observation.
I mean, I can label that growing pains, but like you said, it's been happening for a couple of years now and it seems like if you got whatever the 19 different rating systems there are, but obviously, you know, if you got a high ranked player, that fans love and know and have had results in the past, I mean, how can that be bad in any way, shape, or form for the tournament? So let's take a look at a couple mixed teams. We have Dylan Frazier and Georgia Johnson, definite contenders. Sure. We have Dekelbar and Jade Kawamoto. They played a few together on the APP tour, so they, I'm sure, are developing a little rapport. Andre Deescu and Maggie Remenzi, they've been playing a lot together this year as well. Kyle Yates and Susanna Barr, Eric Lang and Mary Brasha, AJ Kohler and Callie. That's a classic. James Ignatowicz and Leah Jansen. Has that happened before? Have you seen that before? Ignatowicz and Leah?
Nope.
Yeah. So that's a new one. Stefan Avern and Megan Fudge. I believe that is a new one as well. And, you know, you never know, especially with, we talked about it a couple times with the lefty guy and the lady that likes playing the left. So I think that'll be,
I think more of a thing.
Go ahead.
I do not like playing Megan Fudge. Like I do not like her in front of me. Not because like she's scary, but because all of my attacks that typically work on every other female PPA, it doesn't matter. Like, she's so casual with like the counters. Like, it really pisses me off.
Well, it's,
like, I've played her a couple of times. I keep losing to her because I cannot stop attacking because I'm like, she shouldn't be getting these because nobody else gets these, but she continues to get them and continues to make me look stupid. And I need to stop attacking her because it's strange. Like, she's been on, like, I remember playing my first rec game with her and I was doing all my stuff and she's just like, boop, boop. Like, try to be good, Rob. You're this does not work. Try to be better. And it's infuriating. Like it works on everybody else. But yeah, she's
guys
just like,
included.
Guys included.
Yeah.
But so, she's just so casual with the counters.
Yeah, and it's just one of those things. Doesn't matter. Obviously, she's a very good player. It doesn't matter where you stack up on the rankings, number 1, 2, or 25. Sometimes you just see someone's ball better.
Yeah.
So for whatever reason, she handles the flippy long stockings better than most. So kudos to Megan. She's been on a steady climb with her game, and I think she's a great player as well. Let's see here. We got Rafa Hewitt and Irina Tereshchenko, BLQK back in the house trying to relive some of that MLP magic. We have DJ Young and Lauren Stratman. A lot of firepower there. J.W. Johnson, Paris Todd, very good team, obviously. Maggie Barasha and Pablo Tellez. Vivian and Thomas, the well-oiled machine that has been doing great on that APP tour. We'll see how they fare in this one. Julian Arnold and Lee Whitwell. Rob Cassidy, Michelle Esquivel, Callan Dawson, Megan Dijon Mustard. That's a classic. They've been playing together quite a bit. Matt and Lucy, Ryler DeHart and Ansberry. I do believe that is a first-time matchup. Robert, where'd you go? Oh, now he's frozen again. Well, I'll just keep going here. We have Catherine and CJ's brother, Riley and Anna Lee. That's the very interesting one, Riley and Anna Lee. So we got Catherine and CJ's brother, and we got Riley and Anna Lee. Very interesting. Zane and Andrea Coop, obviously, played together many times. Jay and Jesse, another regular. Tyson and Lee Waters. Federico and Simone Jargin. And Tyler Lung and Anna Bright played together quite a few times as well. So very, very interesting matchups on the men's side and the mixed side. So it's going to be a very exciting tournament, no doubt. There it is. All right, last event we're going to talk about here. Since the matchups are interesting, we won't talk much about the singles. So we got the women's pro here. We have a relatively small draw. We have Irina Tereshchenko and Georgia Johnson. Very interesting. And I would be interested to see what side they play.
Yep.
As Georgia's been studly on the left the last handful of tournaments I've seen her play. Obviously, Irina likes the left with that really nice carve backhand slice dink. And so we'll have to see who plays what side. Bobby Oshiro and Lee Whitwell. Jade Kawamoto, Michelle Esquivel. Maggie Remenzi, Susanna Barr, the Brasha sisters. Lucy and Callie, of course. Vivian David and Leia Jansen, which makes a little bit of sense. Leia likes that left side. Vivian very much likes the right side. Probably one of the better right-sided women's players out there, if not the best. Lee and Anna Lee, shocking. Simone and Andrea, very solid team there as well. Anna Bright, Jesse Urban, they've been having some really nice success. And Rachel Ritger, Megan Fudge, and Sarah Ansberry, and Sierra Leach Gaitan. So, Gaitan Leach, I don't know which one it is, whatever. But either way, we saw her in MLP. She's a player. She's got some game out there. So matching her up with the veteran Ansberry is a solid team. And that's the women's doubles, Robert. So that is the
– Who's your favorite?
Oh, who's my favorite? Let's see here.
Who's your favorite in each event, actually?
Yeah, okay. So I will take – well, obviously told you my dark horse, Mills Miller, for the men's draw. That was a joke. sorry, Mills. You know what? I'll take a first pairing and kind of – obviously not a dark horse because they're super talented players, but I think maybe Leia Jansen and Vivian David could do a little damage in this tournament. So I'll take that. A lot more established teams out there that are obviously very good teams, but they're regular partnerships. So I'll take the new partnership and see if they can sneak on that medal stand.
I think the only question mark there for me is, we've seen Viv playing really, really well. Obviously, Leia getting to the championship Sunday in singles this last PPA. See Viv doing really well with Thomas. I think their personalities really mesh well together in terms of, being kind of happy-go-lucky, smiley team smiley out there.
Yeah.
Leia, not quite the same in terms of like on court demeanor.
Right. I think for sure.
Leia is closer to how I am, which is more like, looks like you're angry all the time, even if you're not, but definitely more focused. So it'll be I think the question mark is how well do Viv and Leia mesh?
Right. Yeah. So I think you're exactly right. Game style seems to fit nicely, but personality very important, especially in that new partnership. So obviously, Anna Lee and Riley are the favorites in mixed. Not by a large degree, but I would put them definitely favored over Catherine and Colin's brother. So there was another one I was looking at. Obviously, Thomas and Vivian have been playing great together. And I will take a Georgia Johnson and Dylan Frazier. So I think that Georgia, obviously great at all events. I think she's a little stronger on the women's side just because her power is so overwhelming. Yep. And, you know, a little more difficult to do that against the guy. But I think Dylan and Georgia could really play well together. And I think that they have a good rapport off the court. So I think that they're, you know, their meshing is going to be there, even though I don't believe they play together too frequently, maybe just a time or two.
Yep. No, I agree. I think hand speed for Dylan and Georgia is pretty elite.
Yes, correct. And why can I not find the men's bracket? So difficult. There we go. And then the fellas, I'm going to take a – who am I going to take a stab at here? I think the Julian Kyle could be solid. I would say that's definitely more of a, you know, outside shot to medal. And I had one other team that I was looking, you know what? I'm just going to stick on this gosh darn Dylan Frazier bandwagon. And I'm going Rafa Hewitt and Dylan Frazier to not only ruin someone's day, have an outside shot of sneaking in that medal stand. So,
Ooh. Yeah,
the strong statement, strong take. But hey, like I said, low floor, high ceiling from Rafa. You don't know who's going to show up. He will bring the energy and the Coca-Cola Classic, but he will also, can play like a top 10 player or play like the 47th ranked player. So we'll just have to see what he brings to the table as we pretty much know what we're going to get from Dylan Frazier.
Yep.
Rob.
I like those.
Dare I say it feels right to possibly end this podcast right here?
I invited a guest. It just depends how soon he responds.
Oh my, who might this be?
I guess we'll have to find. So just fill the air. Tell me a good story, Adam.
A good story. Wow. Yesterday.
My internet is so sketchy today. I don't know why.
Well, here's a good story.
Yeah, hit me.
Well, yesterday, we had our old house. We had a closed-in backyard. The cat loved to go out there. And since we've been to the new house, the backyard is not completely fenced in. So he's been staring at the window looking out. He's very much an indoor cat. So I suggested that we let him out, let him enjoy his time in the backyard. He's pretty skittish. He's probably not going to go far. And sure enough, a couple hours later, we get a call that someone's dogs are attacking a cat in the backyard. So I don't think there was any major injuries, but he's a little rattled. We ended up getting him back in the house. But, you know, that was my bad, Prof.
This is why you don't have cats.
Yeah, that's fair enough. I can't argue with that. But now that I live in the kind of more in the country, I kind of feel like a cat can be good just to kill all those varmints. You know, I don't like varmints.
I don't like varmints.
There's lots of, I know varmints are more mammals, but there's a lot of spiders and bugs and scurrying about in the backyard. And it kind of freaks me out a little bit, to be honest.
You know, this is just part of compound living. It's a part of having a compound and a complex.
Yeah,
you know, this is it. This is the downside of it. You know, you get two pickleball courts, a pool, a sauna, a cold plunge, you know, an 8-bedroom house, but you also have to deal with the varmints.
Yeah, I know. It's life. What can you say? It's never all good. A little give and take there. And I can deal with a varmint or two if I can have my compound, which is still very far away from happening.
You know what I'm going to do real quick, Adam? I've got a lot of questions, actually, Q&A.
Okay, please.
So we're not done here, Adam.
Okay. Hey, I was asking you if it felt right to end. I wasn't committing.
Not for me. Not for me, yes. It didn't.
I wasn't committing to it feeling right for me. Okay, fire away. I'll answer. You know I like to talk.
All right, let me pull these up. So this is from Josh Underwood on Instagram, who had just apparently been watching MLP at the time. Seems like he's a little newer watching pro pickleball as well as his wife. They were kind of watching it together. But here is his message to me. Really enjoy listening to your podcast and insight into the pro pickleball world. Wondering what your thoughts are on the demonstrative celebrations that some players seem to do after what seems like every point. Having played both team and individual sports at a high level, I understand intensity and emotion running high. I really enjoy watching most pro pickleball, and the level of play in the latest MLP was absolutely insane. I have to admit, I was a bit turned off. While I can appreciate a good celebration here and there, it seemed like so many of the point celebrations were almost to the point of disrespectful. I understand I'm just a viewer and don't know what is going on behind the scenes, But as a viewer, it did turn me off, and my wife quit watching altogether. Maybe we were missing something. I can't judge someone without knowing the whole story, so I'd be interested to hear your take on a podcast episode. Thanks.
Oh, yeah. No, I think there's been a lot of topic about that. As you know, yeah. I've kind of started, I have a slight addiction to chat these last couple tournaments, which I had never really done before. So it's a big topic in the chat as well. Actually, I had to leave the chat at this Texas Open because I wasn't even watching the matches. I was just commenting with the chat. So, I think for me, Robert, the main thing is I don't even really care anything about a celebration, how intense it is, how loud it is, if it's to your partner or to the fans. It's when the celebration or after the point is over, it's at your opponent that is more of the issue. Like stare downs, fist pump to your partner, awesome. Fist pump all day, fist pump after the game won. If you're having that back and forth with your partner, giving them the crazy eyes and yelling, do whatever you want to. But when that crosses over to kind of down at your opponent, towards your opponent, aggression, whether it's fist pumping, finger wagging, whatever, towards your opponent. You can even finger wag walking back to the baseline with your partner, and that bothers me less. But when it's directed at the opponent, I do think that that is a little off-putting to not only the casual viewer, some of even the pickleball purists out there. So that's kind of how I see it.
Interesting. I think, yeah, I'm a little torn. Like, I think obviously a big concept with pickleball is viewership and getting people to watch. And so Josh here, his question, so it turns him off, right? I think for a lot of people, it intrigues them. Mm-hmm. And they like seeing kind of the disrespect because it's unusual, right? You don't see it in tennis really very often of a player staring down his opponent, because you'd get like a point penalty. Like that mm-hmm. would actually be a penalty. Or finger wagging or any of that stuff, like kind of the jawing. And the unique aspect of pickleball is that the court is so small and you're so close in proximity together that it kind of is a duel like that where you're chirping back and forth. And I find it interesting. I can absolutely see, like, you know, a match at 1-0-1 in the first game where you're like screaming at the top of your lungs. Like some of that's like, okay, like it's not a big point, relax. But the kind of the stare downs and stuff like that, I find fun. So you're in the other camp of where you think that's a bit more on the disrespectful side?
You know, and I more so than what you're saying. So those extended, I mean, and you know, you hit a big counter, you know, guy hits a poor attack, you hit a big counter and you kind of look at him and give him a little, you know, whatever, you know, sure. That's great. It's like the aggressive fist pumping while trying to make contact with the opponent, even like possibly after the point, walking towards the net and doing it.
Oh, I like it.
Yeah. I mean, that's, it's super polarizing. Just like you said, like the chat, it's like people are disgusted by it or they're like, oh my God, this is awesome. Give me more of this. Give me more of this. So I do think it is, I like the energy. And when I'm on court, there's only been maybe a couple times in my whatever 5+ year career where I was even remotely rattled. I almost don't even hear it. The point's over. I just walk back to the baseline with my partner and I'm just kind of just gone. So it's never really affected me much, even though I have had a couple times early on a match or two with Matt Wright. I got under my skin a little bit and I can't really even think, and the last handful of times has been no issue. I just, you know, I kind of just chalk it up. This is what he's going to do, be bigger and be better and not let it bother you. And it hasn't, but, So as a player, I would say, you know, it doesn't bother me as at all, but you're right. I mean, this, we want eyeballs. We want people viewing. What do the masses really want? Do they want the intensity? Are they off-putted? And it, you know what? I'm not sure there's a right answer. So it just seems so polarizing and so love it or hate it that I don't know what is the best for the sport, to be honest.
Yeah, and I think pickleball is unique that we can, like, you'll be in a unique spot next year too, where you can actually provide commentary on what's happening, why it's happening. Did something happen off court? Like, I don't know if that's too much for the casual viewer saying, this is why they're so pissed because last tournament this happened. But I think viewers need to understand the context of, like, why is this person freaking out every point? Why are they staring this person down? Like, what is the beef?
Right.
So I find that stuff interesting.
Yeah. And it is. And I think that, you know, I have a lot of that information in my back pocket. And, you know, a lot of it I'm very happy to share, but some of it, it's a little dicey also, you know, but anytime you're, you know, in a situation with a small group of people that are together a lot, traveling a lot, have business and personal relationships with each other, there is going to be some stuff from the past that gets brought back up in these situations. So I do think it's cool to talk about, and I'm always, when I'm in the booth, kind of balancing out, you know, catering to the pickleball purists and the guys that know everything that's going on and the casual fan that doesn't know as much. And that's a tough balance to do as a commentator. But there's a lot of this stuff is, you know, so-and-so dropped me last year. So-and-so did this. They did something I didn't like in this tournament. So things run deep and, you know, time heals, but sometimes on some of this stuff, it seems like it doesn't, because a lot of people hold grudges for a while.
Yeah. And pickleball gets this, like, you know, there's this narrative about pickleball and pro pickleball too, where it's like all, like, everybody's friends, it's social, it's happy. Mm-hmm. Everybody gets along. Yeah. People hate each other. There's lots of people that hate each other. Impossible. Like it, and it's great. I find it very fun.
I think you're exactly right. There's some deep rooted stuff, and, you know, I'll throw out a very generalized statement here. Very generalized. Seems to be a little more beefy on the female side than the men's side. Not that there's not plenty of beefs on the guys' side, but some of the girl stuff, and there's been a little more, maybe because there's a few less players on the women's side. There seems to be a carousel of partners and some stuff that has happened in the past where maybe, you know, having more male players, it hasn't happened quite as much, but it's definitely very interesting stuff. And I can see, as a casual fan, like, what? And then you get a little piece of information, you're like, that makes a little bit more sense, that the vibe of this match is the way it is.
100%. We got a guest, Mr. Thomas Shields, T Shields. He's waiting in the waiting room here. So let's add him to the stream. I think we just wanted to discuss a little bit of,
I'm super zoomed, huh?
More zoom, the better on that beautiful face, Thomas.
You guys have nice hair, both of you. I like
my hair. I just woke up.
Whoa, I was just saying, I think your haircut looks good, Adam.
Oh, same.
Thank you.
But now I can't think like what you usually have. Like, maybe because you're always wearing a hat.
Normally I would say two on the sides, fade it up and take a little bit off the top. I have never, every time the barber or whatever you want to call them, every time they say, look in the mirror, does this look good? I never say it looks bad. I just, whatever they give me, that's what I roll out of the place
with. I do the same thing. It's just all about length. And when my mom used to take me to get a haircut, she would just say, give them the boy's haircut or the men's haircut.
There you go.
I still ask for that, knowing full well that doesn't actually mean anything.
It could possibly be a shit show if you go with that route. But hey, you know, I'm just going to roll with it. When you got a pretty face, it doesn't really matter what your hair looks like. You know?
So. Especially when you're a high-end content creator, pickleball influencer, Adam.
And I'll tell you right now, Robert, you cannot say that too many times on the podcast, because it is just fact at this point.
Oh, just filling your cup.
Have you guys actually been recording for almost 2 hours now?
There's been a mess of stuff. Like, we've had some pauses. We've had some. So thank you, the Dink team, for cleaning up this episode, because it's a bit of a mess. My internet's gone in and out. It's been a disaster.
And I'm, but, you know, I'm, go ahead.
We're Robert, persevering. Continue. We're persevering, because that's what we do.
Mm-hmm. So Shieldsy, what are we chatting about? There's a lot going on, man. Let's talk.
Yeah, what's your vibe?
Nice.
Thank you.
I don't know. What's your vibes? I wish I could have heard the beginning of this.
Yeah, so just a quick slight overview. We probably we did the recap of the Texas Open and the preview of the Nationals. But the first probably 30 minutes or so was talking about, you know, just the vibe stuff. There for sure, six teams went through the list of players, the men's and the women's, talked about some of the funny tweets that went on with Cuban and some of the MLP owners.
And how it's a joke, but not really a joke, because we've already seen an owner jump leagues before. So like with the Discovery Warriors and Meldman from Discovery Land, who I think people have already forgotten that was a team in MLP in 2021.
Yeah. Where'd they jump to?
So Discovery pooled their investment from MLP and invested, you know, so you see the Casamigos logo. So they invested in PPA.
Oh, they did.
And that's Dundon, because that's Dundon's buddy.
Right,
Properties. Is that correct, Rob?
Yeah, Discovery Company. Yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I kind of just like walked around. So I was in Dallas on Saturday. Met Mark Cuban, by the way. I talked to him for like, maybe like 5-10 minutes, which was cool. But I was just sort of bouncing around, like going up to people and being like, what's your take on this thing? Most of the players, the sentiment was just like, I'm going to do what's best for me. Like, this is a business decision. Yeah. And that seems to be where a lot of people are these days. Whereas, like, you know, if this were to be happening last year, 2 years ago, it'd be more about relationships and, like, you know, who's close with who. But, like, I always thought that, for example, JW, I thought he was, like, super close with, you know, the MLP team and stuff. So I was super surprised to see him go over to the Vibe. But to me, that's a business decision. Like, he's debatably one of the best players in the world, right? He wants to make a run at the crown. Mm-hmm. And he needs to be playing against the best week in, week out to do that. So I get that. I'm not sure if they, you know, gave him like double what they're going to offer everybody else, or there are some other like nuance there, but.
Yeah, that was my point is I think it's even less about wanting to play against the best and prove himself there. I think, you know, what I told Adam earlier was that it you know, he's not leaving MLP because they do have good relationships with Steve and the MLP team. So it's like, they're not leaving for comparable money or even maybe double money. I think it's significant for them to make that jump. And, you know, Adam asked like, well, okay, what does MLP need to do? And, you know, obviously I think long-term for the sport, the fragmentation is not great, but short-term for the players, I think it can be really, really good. But for MLP not to, you know, for MLP they have to lock down top talent somehow. They have to. If they want to be the premier pro pickleball league, they have to figure out how to lock down their talent.
If they want to be known as the premier, but I don't know that you necessarily need to be in order to put on a good show. And, you know, I don't mean any offense by this. I'm just drawing a parallel, but look at like the Harlem Globetrotters, right? Like, they still get stadiums full. Like, you know, they put on a fun show and it's a spectacle. And, you know, so there's that route too.
There is the Savannah Bananas route.
Yeah. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. I was with that guy. I was with the guy who runs that in New York last week. And I was like, I need to put you in touch with these pickleball guys. Like, you need
to
like,
so Steve's already talked to Jesse.
Okay, cool. Yeah. I feel like both organizations could benefit from a little more showmanship. But I will say, being in Dallas this weekend, that was the first PPA I've been to in a while. They've come a long way. Like, it's like a real event. You know, there's like a VIP lounge, like good snacks, you know, drinks. You know, there's a lot of different places to sit. There's just a lot of like extra production and pageantry now.
Yeah, I agree. I agree, Thomas. And you can just see when they scan the championship court, the little sections of bleachers, like the viewing aspect of it definitely looks nice. And that's obviously very important. So also wanted to say about your comment, I think there's been a slight vibe or just a little bit of some comments that I've seen that I don't think are necessarily fair to the Johnsons. I think some people kind of were, well, they're going to stick with what they have done. You know, there are those good people that are going to do that. And I think that that's really unfair. You know, it's a business decision. And I think that absolutely they wanted to stick with MLP if they could, but I mean, everyone has a number and everyone has an offer. And I think that's a little ridiculous to, you know, possibly say something poor to them for making a business decision. And I just don't think that's very fair.
It's unfair to try and label it good or bad. It's right, also okay. Like super naive to think that you, as somebody who isn't behind the scenes and is a casual viewer, would have all the information you need to actually make a decision on whether mm-hmm. it was, you know, a good or bad move or who's a good person or who's a bad person. And I mean, there's just so much going on that I think people just don't realize. So to make those assumptions just doesn't make any sense to me.
Right. Keyboard warriors will always be keyboard warriors. So that's just a fact, but you're exactly right. I mean, just think of some of the conversations we were having in January and February. It's not even a year. It has not even been a year in this sport and these leagues and these all this stuff in the tours. So it's crazy to really, if you really put a timeline on it, how short a lot of this stuff timeline has been for this stuff to happen. So.
Yeah, for sure. No, I was thinking about that. You know, because if you do go back 6 months, I'd be like, all right, everything that happened pre-Vibe, 6 months ago, I would have never expected that to happen. Like so crazy, mm-hmm. all the different developments, the owners and stuff. And somehow every month it gets one-upped by some mm-hmm. new news. And so now I'm sitting here and I'm saying there's no way like any other, like anybody, there's another development that's more crazy than what's happened so far. Mm-hmm. But I've said that like 6 times.
Yeah. Wild times for sure.
And I don't know, like Adam talked about a little earlier in terms of diminishing returns, like the first celebrity announcement, you're like, whoa. And then like a new one gets announced, you're like, cool. And then a new one gets announced, you're like, okay. And that's what they're doing. You know what I mean? So it's like, and there's another one being announced tomorrow, apparently for MLP as well as a new sponsor.
And that will be the final team, right?
Will it?
That's what I heard.
I've heard they're going to 18 teams. Maybe that's, it might be totally wrong, but I think Adam heard the same.
Yeah, all speculation. So
all speculation.
That's
yeah.
What, you know, little birdies like to tell me things. So that's yeah. That's just little birdie in my ear.
I'm going off of a different source than usual, but I'm at UT right now. I'm getting my MBA, and I was sitting in like the lobby of the MBA building, and Melly Price walked by because she works in that building, and she was, you know, one of the original co-founders of MLP, and she's like, yeah, well, we still have one more announcement we're going to be making here next week. And I was like, oh, okay, one more.
Cool. But okay.
I don't know. Yeah.
No, it's good.
Maybe it's like they have one more lined up, whether they're going to expand or not. Like they have one more who's actually committed.
And we also talked about how they're getting away from the tournament format like they originally announced and going strictly team, which is a new development. So,
I think they need to do.
Yeah. I think you want to have your unique value, right? And that was what their unique value was.
To me, it's like, and I could be totally proven wrong, but Vibe is a complement to the PPA, right?
At least that's how the tournament, right?
Yeah, that's like, they're still a tour. That's their main priority. That's where most of the investment goes. Now, if they put on a great league in tandem with that, cool. I think that helps their brand. You know, it has a lot of other benefit, but like MLP, their main product is being a major league, having teams. That's their big differentiator. So if that's their priority and Vibe is the PPA is kind of like, you know, complement, it's not their priority, you know, and they just focus on being the best team event in pickleball and building that out in a way that, you know, PBA just simply can't afford to do, not just from like a monetary perspective, but like just time and focus and capacity, then they still have a path to, I guess, like victory, if you want to call it that, right?
Yeah, I think, but you're right, in terms of the MLP product, if you're not going to have the very, very top players, you've got to put on, like you said, a spectacle. It needs to be wildly entertaining. It needs to be unique, which they've already kind of proven that, like the team format and the concept and the Dream Breaker and all that stuff, super exciting. And matches are always super close. You don't have many blowouts. So I think it's just adding in some more entertaining aspects, whether it's Savannah Banana style, where you have dancing and just, it's more of like you bring the kids and it's like really entertaining. So it'll be interesting to see where they go. I know Steve's always been interested in creating like a fans, I think the Bananas thing is fans first. Like, they're an entertainment company. So if MLP, I know they want to be the premier provider of pickleball content. If that's the case, like, it sounds like that's the route they might go.
Hey, everybody's shaking their head. Yeah, it's good. No, but I think Thomas made a good point there. It's like, you know, there's not really much. It's friendly, but there's not really any relationship between MLP and APP. And, you know, this vibe is very much a PPA league with, I think, only one or two of the however many stops are separate from a PPA tournament. It's all piggybacked with the tour. So I think that that's an important piece of information.
Here's the other thing. So if you look at like the PGA Tour, I guess most people knew this. I didn't know, but like, you know, the Masters, the Waste Management Open, like a lot of these tournaments, Waste Management might be a bad example. That might be owned by the PGA, but they're independent events. They have separate ownership groups.
Yeah.
And I think there's still a path for that within pickleball where like, okay, the investment group comes in, acquires the US Open and says, this is going to be the most badass tournament ever. Yeah. And because they raise on that business model, this one tournament, that's what they focus on. That's what they raise capital for. It's like, how could the PPA or MLP compete with that? And so I think we'll still see these events emerge as, I don't know, spectacles of their own, businesses of their own. And that could be a way that we see further disruption separate from what we've already seen.
Yeah, that'd be an interesting path forward. I mean, that's like, it's the US Open model already, right? It's like what they do, but you're talking about like on steroids.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, why could Steve go, you know, raise a little extra money and go buy the US Open and make that like, so Major League Pickleball leads to the US, I don't know. Like,
yeah. No, I don't know exactly what the PGA does, but yeah, that's how I understood it as well, Thomas. And then maybe there's some form of list of things or some standard that has to be brought to those specific tournaments because it's kind of under the umbrella of the tour. That's kind of how I understood it. There were some slight negotiations about US Open and PPA being very involved. And that, I think that's what PPA was saying was, you guys can still have your tournament, but we're going to have a list of things that must be made available for the players. So yeah, just another kind of a little possibility there where it's some form of PPA umbrella or APP umbrella or whatever it is, but you do have the specific tournaments that meet a few requirements, but can do their own things because they're invested by a separate group or whatever. So I think that very much makes sense and could be a route that we see happen.
Yeah.
Well, Thomas, this is the podcast presented by the Dink. This is the first time we've had you on.
Yeah.
How do you think everything's going? Are we crushing it? What's give us some feedback here.
Adam.
Yes.
I need high end content creator.
I need a new camera for you. Okay.
Okay. All right.
And that shelf looks like prime real estate for some really cool like studio backdrop. I don't know if you're sitting at a table.
Oh yeah, yeah. That back. Here, actually, I'm gonna show you these real fast. These are kind of cool. This is old school pickleball. This is good stuff. And you might see me in my underwear, but that's cool. Everybody wins.
So he was talking earlier. This is like Prof's trophy case, basically. Oh, look at those boxer briefs and those white thighs. Come here.
Well, what are those? What am I looking at?
That is the trophy for the first real pickleball tour ever, the PPF, way back in the day, right?
What's
there.
A year?
Obviously,
on that?
the prof. So we have 2017 mixed doubles pro for this one,
legit,
and women's doubles pro for this one. So
legit.
The PPF was actually the first tour, and it very much folded for whatever reasons. I don't know the specifics.
Pro pickleball.
Pro Pickleball Federation, Professional Pickleball Federation, right. So just a little, you know, I love talking about the new stuff, obviously, but just a little blast from the past with some trophies from the prof about the first real pickleball tour. We're getting there.
I'll go ahead and tell you, I like the PPF trophy better than all the current trophies that are ridiculous sizes that they're holding. It's like, a 250 point tournament and the trophy's bigger than J-Dub. Let's get rid of those. Those are ridiculous.
Or
that's the new big check. Let's get rid of the big
check. Yeah, exactly. Too. That's what I was going to say. It's like, you know, there's always some sort of imbalance.
Yeah.
No, you guys should have on Corinne more. You should make her come on more.
The prof should
be did have her on, I really liked that episode. She was good. And generally, like, we should get more guests on.
Yeah.
100%.
You know,
we've been talking about that a lot with the possible guests. And, you know, occasionally I lack focus of making things happen, even though I have the ideas in my head. So, We haven't pulled the trigger on that yet, but lots of guests in the work, and it feels like we're a hot commodity because a lot of the pro players will make comments to me about when you get me on the pod, this and that, da 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 da. So I think that I love my rapport with my co-host Robert Nunnery, but I think getting a couple guests on would be a great dynamic to add to the pod.
Yeah, it helps grow it too, right? Like, you just naturally get exposed to, you know, whoever's obsessed
they
with
share
that,
it.
That one,
yeah,
one player, sure. Right?
Oh, definitely. And, you know, I mean, you can see it. I mean, I think people, you know, for the most part, like listening to Robert and myself. But if, you know, on the little whatever clickbait, it says J.W. Johnson or Dylan Frazier, Anna Bright or whoever, Matt Wright or whoever it may be, they're probably going to be a little more likely to watch that stuff than just being me and Rob. So got to get those guests on. I think we both have a good relationship with a lot of the top players. So I think that's going to be a fun step whenever we actually do make the plunge.
Yeah. You need to,
the plunge now.
And you need to see if you can go get, we should have like Pardo come on. I bet he would, if you guys asked, get mm-hmm. that perspective.
Yeah.
When these developments do happen, it's like, let's go to the organization, not just the players that are, you know, playing in these tournaments. It's like, who's actually making the decisions? Because nobody typically gets that perspective. And mm-hmm. it's usually always different than what everybody assumed, right?
Yeah.
Adds a lot.
I like it. Constructive criticism. Love that.
That's
love that.
Yeah. It feels right to end it right now. Thank you for joining us, Thomas. Thank you, Adam, as always.
God,
feels right to say goodbye.
It does feel right. And just one last parting thought. I am committed to this podcast and the pickleball community. I never do things longer than 2 hours. And we are at 2 hours and 4 minutes of recording. That is some gosh darn dedication. Let's go.
Joe Rogan style.
It's only because you got lighter before this episode, Adam, and made sure that you squeezed one out first.
Well, it's
Thomas likes this
pre-match poop or poop. Either one is very important. So,
Rob, let's talk. We've talked about your ass enough on other podcasts, but are you telling me you're not unloading pre-episode? I mean, that's like a staple.
No, you have to. I am. You have to.
For sure.
And I record first thing in the morning, so I can't, you know, and that's my regular time to enjoy the porcelain throne. So,
yeah, that's,
you know,
right.
I do that, then I come out here.
And one last thing, again, I already said that twice, but my mother said that she absolutely loved our inaugural episode, and she was like, Rob kind of talked a little too much about his butt, but other than that, it was very Mama Stone, shout out to her as always. Pretty funny stuff.
I just like that your mom talked about my butt for a second.
Yeah, she was like, yeah, he kind of went for it there for 10 or 15 minutes, but it was good. It was good.
Thank you, Mama Stone.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Okay.
Right, until next time. See ya.
Because you know why?
Why?
Because it feels right.
Legendary.